This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Good evening, everybody. First of all, I just want to thank everybody for coming out tonight to support this New York legend, this sports legend, and let's clap it up louder. And I'm, you know, Henrik and I have just been able to connect recently, but I'm always fascinated by how people talk about people when they're not there. And we've shared a lot of acquaintances and friends and people that interacted. And I think the way that people speak about you that know you, I think is a real testament to who you are as a man. And I, even though I have to fly out right after this to get to LA, when this opportunity came to host this, I said yes. And it obviously you did incredible things on the ice and you do incredible things outside of it. But the way that people talk about you was the most compelling reason. And so it's an honor to be here with you.
Well, thanks, Gary. Thanks for being here. Thank you for you guys for being here. I'm going to get into it a little bit while we're here.
Appreciate it. Let's do it, my friend. So everybody, I'm Gary Vaynerchuk. I'm an entrepreneur and sports fan here in New York. I'm incredibly humbled to be here to have this discussion this evening with Henrik Lundqvist, one of the greatest hockey players of all time. And we will talk a little bit about that. And we will talk a little bit about something I'm very passionate about, which is life after. And so let's just get into it, Henrik. You know, obviously for a lot of us in this room, we know quite a bit about your career, who you are, how you've navigated that. But there's people in this room that may have a little less context. So just for setting the stage, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your professional career, why hockey, how you found that passion, and let's build from there.
All right. I'm from Sweden. I moved to New York City back in 2005, and hockey's been my life since I was probably 7, 8 years old. It was my biggest dream, my passion growing up, to become a professional hockey player. And to get that opportunity to play for the New York Rangers for 15 years here in New York City, it was a dream come true, obviously. And, you know, to have passion for something and to be guided through life, I think it helped me so many times growing up, but also being here in the city. You know, to feel so strongly about something, sometimes I felt like it was a blessing. You know, it's not easy to find passion for something, but as an athlete, I think a lot of people feel that it drives you, it motivates you, but it guides you as well. But yeah, so I played here for 15 years and retired about, is it 2 years now? Officially 2 years, but I haven't played in 3 years.
Fair enough.
Hey, I'm Mike from Team Gary Vee. Today's episode is between Gary and Henrik Lundqvist, former goalie of the New York Rangers. They discuss everything from hockey to Henrik's hobbies. You won't want to miss this episode. Enjoy.
When did you realize, I think something that I'm fascinated about, passion meeting skill, I spent a lot of time thinking about humanity. I'm interested in it. And I think the greatest gift is if you actually love something you actually happen to be good at as well, that's a real gift. So we hear the passion side for hockey. At what point in your career in Sweden as a kid, I assume, but please correct me if I'm wrong, when did you know that you were good? And maybe even more interestingly for the hockey nerds here, when did you think you could make the league?
I thought it was decent at 11, 12, but I don't know if there was a time where I felt like I'm gonna make it, but it was always a dream. And I felt like the dream was as important as realizing how good you were.
Yep.
I think that dream pushed me more than anything. Then you start hearing people talk about you and this kid is good, but you also realize there's so much work to be done before you make it, before you get that opportunity. You know, you start playing junior national team at 16, 17, obviously you start to feel that things are falling into place. And then when you get drafted at 18, late pick.
Do you have any feelings about that?
you just happen that you do get drafted.
Sure.
But also you realize how much work you have to put in to make it happen. You can almost touch it. Almost touch that big dream you had for about, you know, 12 years. And then eventually it became reality.
Let's talk about your career a little bit, just to make it fun for a lot of us in this room. Now you're in the NHL, the highest level of hockey. And how long did it take you to get comfortable in the league? Like, was your first game something you calibrated and you're like, okay, I belong here? Or was it, did it take some time? Or was there, if you think about your incredible career, was there a single game or maybe even a single save that kind of calmed it or kind of put it into perspective of like, I'm going to be here for a while?
I think that's an important part when you enter the league as a young kid, that as soon as you can get that feeling of you belonging, I think you just bring down the pressure and you bring it down to a level where every day feels comfortable. I had an opportunity to play against some of the best players in the world the year before I moved here because there was a lockout.
That's right.
There was no NHL back in 2004.
That's right.
So playing in Sweden my last year, I did play against some of the best goaltenders in the world. And I had a great season and we ended up winning. I knew I could compete against them.
That's huge.
So mentally coming here, I felt that I belonged. It
was the lockout was a real gift in disguise.
In a way, yes.
Yeah.
I felt like I was well prepared for what was ahead, but I didn't know what to expect really with the city, playing for the Rangers,
sure.
The original six, the pressure. You just had to be very open-minded, you know, when you're about to open the door to something completely new. I think it's important to set the expectations. And for me, it was be open-minded. You know, I grew up in a small town in Sweden, a ski town, and then moved here. I lived a couple other places before we moved here, but to be open-minded, moving across the sea, leaving everybody behind, and
let's talk about New York for a second. What was the thing that you instantly fell in love with in this incredible city, and what was kind of the thing that took you a little while to adjust to?
Well, the amount of people, that took a while to adjust to, and the traffic. What I loved about the city from day one was the energy. The energy and the opportunity.
Yeah.
The opportunity of, you know, meeting people, doing things. I feel like wherever you're looking for, eventually you will find it in this city. But opportunity and the energy. And it's funny. Throughout my career, every time we're on the road for 3-4 days, you came back to the city and it was always like, oh yeah.
A jolt.
You could feel that energy. So that's probably the top of the list.
Let's get a little hockey nerdy. This is very selfish. I apologize if you're not as nerdy as this, but talk to me about the two or three players that when you were taking the ice, you're like, ugh, this guy. Like when you think back to this 15-year career, which offensive players or maybe a defenseman with, you know, who or a guy crowding the net, who, now that you can kind of take a step back, who were those toughest competitors that you knew, you saw it on the schedule, like tonight's gonna be a tough night, I need to be careful, this one's tricky for me?
Well, I have one guy, Alex Ovechkin. He's one of the best goal scorers of all time. He might break the all-time records for goals, which if you ask anybody 10 years ago,
unheard,
not a chance.
Yeah.
But I think he's the player that scored the most goals against me, and he's probably the player that played the most against me.
Yeah, of course, but in the same division.
And I love that.
What made him tricky?
His shot.
Too fast? Just fast?
No, it's just extremely hard. Not always accurate, but extremely hard.
Yeah.
So it's hard to read it.
What about the highest of highs? If I asked you the single moment on the ice that most brought you joy, what would stand out?
Just winning.
Let's clap that up. I like that.
Like, it's, you know, you play to win.
You play to win the game, Herman.
Yeah, obviously winning Olympic gold, world champion.
Yep, that was huge.
And the Swedish championships, that meant a lot. And unfortunately, came out short.
I know, so out. Close. But
in the end, there were so many great moments in that year, big games and winning. You put so much into back to passion. And to feel like you got rewarded for it was amazing.
Let's talk about passion. You know, my brother and left the company we started 15 years ago, about 7 years in, a marketing firm, and we started a sports representation business. He is an NFL agent, an MLB agent. And one of the reasons we did that was, as my life progressed and I started to meet athletes in real life, not just watching them on TV or a game, I realized, wow, these men and women, they retire so young. Their life's passion is to play this sport. And then they wake up, you know, God forbid, with injuries, some of them in their 20s. Others that have a remarkable career. How old were you when you retired?
38.
That's insane to me. Like, 38 years old, you've had a ridiculously successful 15, you know, career, and you're 38 years old. You're a child. I know everybody under 30 here doesn't understand, but I promise you one day you will. Like, 38 is uncomfortably young, and you've just done your thing and you're retired. So one of the reasons AJ and I wanted to start a sports agency was we were into the business of, when you said win, it made me smile, because I didn't have the athletic ability to be an athlete, but the closest thing next to winning would be entrepreneurship. It was more based on merit than school or corporate or other things that I saw in the world. And so I understand that. Having that big of a passion, finding yourself at the young age of 38, how difficult is the transition to find another passion? And it, you know, or what did that feel like? Like, are you searching for something? Like, what is that transition for a lot of us that will never have that experience to retire at 38 and have all those accomplishments? What's that next step? What's that transition? And how did you feel about it the first days, weeks, and months?
Well, I think at first it's a little shocking that it's over. It's been your life for 30, 35 years, and then it's just gone. But then you come to a point where you start to really dig deep and start thinking about, you know, what is next? What drives me? What's the most important thing to me right now? And for me, you know, obviously it's a big pivot for any athlete to end their career and can go into something new. But for me, it was very obvious what I wanted to do. I want to be around great people. I want to do fun things, and I want to be inspired. Those three things means a lot to me as I go into this next chapter.
Yep.
And do new things. And I love my role at Madison Square Garden.
Yes.
I get to do a lot of different things and work for TV and go to games and concerts. And I get the feel of the city. I love Madison Square Garden because I feel like it's the city. Everybody comes through those doors and you feel the energy and meet amazing people.
Let's switch into the next chapter a little bit. Talk to me about this transition and, you know, obviously you continue to double down and be an incredible ambassador for the world's most famous arena and the center of our city. But talk to me about this next chapter and some of the things that you're moving on to.
Yeah, so like a lot of things in life, I feel like it's about timing. And for years, this was something I was thinking about, a fragrance. But the timing wasn't right, and there's too much focus on hockey. And then Morgan Madison, Swedish brand, reached out about 2 years ago. We started talking for a few months, and it just felt right. And to me, it was a couple of things that were important before we started this project. How do you view this project?
Like, yes.
What do we want to accomplish here? And it became pretty obvious early that we saw it the same way. We want a high-end product, and we want attention to detail. And it just started to come together. It's been 18 months now working on this, and I remember about a year ago, we were back and forth on all the different scents and a couple sessions here in New York, back in Sweden. And I told you, Annika, that are we launching this for Christmas in 22? And she looked at me like, no, it's not going to happen. So at that point, I didn't understand how big of a process it is to start from scratch if you want to do something really good. You have to be patient. And it was something that I loved, the fact that you guys stay patient throughout the process. And You know, when you look at this, we have Orrefors, which is a Swedish glass maker. They celebrate 100 years in the U.S. this year. They're making the bottle. That was one detail, that the coffee table book, kind of the next chapter feel, but where I'm at in my life right now. And the scent itself, two separate scents. That felt really good. You know, to me, a fragrance is kind of like music or food. Depends on how you feel that day, in that situation, what you're going for. So it felt good to create two separate ones.
How hard, I assume that you being excited about the bouquet, the fragrance itself, how challenging was it for you? Because obviously when you team up with incredibly capable partners, so I grew up in the wine business for everyone, very seriously. Like at 14, I was reading about wine at a very serious level. And in my early 20s, I was tasting 200-300 wines a week and was really in it. And I remember the first 2 or 3 years of my career, because I had been reading about wine and educated about wine for 7 years prior to actually drinking it and tasting it at a serious level. It took me a long time to feel comfortable with the context. When you were going through the process, obviously the packaging matters. Obviously the iconic glass that you're working with. Some of the really clever things you're doing with the book. But for you, going through the process of actually deciding if you were aligned with liking the fragrance itself, how challenging was that in a world where you probably liked all of it, all the different variations of the way they blended it? Give us a little nerdy fragrance talk of how that went down.
Well, I remember the first time we sat down for this was in Gothenburg, Sweden, and we had about 25 different scents. And I think we limited down to 5-6, and then the process started. A couple months later, we got a new batch coming back to Sweden, and then we had a couple more of those here in New York City. So we back and forth. I had a couple sessions with my friends and family sometimes, and I wanted to hear what they thought, because they're going to smell it, obviously, when I'm wearing it.
I mean, you're going to wear this stuff a lot.
Yeah, I want to make the call, but obviously I want my wife to enjoy it.
Of course.
My friends and family to enjoy it. But again, the patience of getting it right. It was a lot of back and forth, which I knew it was going to be a process. I just didn't know it was going to take that long. But again, being staying patient through the whole process.
Anything else you want to talk about the process or it? Because I know there's an incredible video, which I want everyone to be able to consume. But anything we didn't touch on in the process of creating next chapter, or anything we wanted to speak on the perfume and the fragrance before we go to the video?
No, I just have to say, I talk about the three different things that matters to me, and I feel like this process has covered that. Right? It's been fun and interesting to learn about the business, working with great people, and get inspired about this whole project. So it's been a lot of fun to do it. But now we're going to
launch it.
Launch it and move it to the next chapter, which is very exciting as well.
I think that unveiling this to this incredible audience deserves a toast. So I think we should do a little toast for everybody.
Well, before we toast, I would love to bring up Annika from Morgan Madison and just say a few words. You heard about my process going through this for the last couple of years, but I'd
let's
love
do that.
For you to speak about
Annika.
Thanks, everybody, and take the drink. Thank you, everybody, for coming here tonight to hear and learn more about our secret. And it's perfume is a niche fragrance, and it can easily be compared to a really good wine. And Gary, I know you like wines.
I do.
Can you tell me a nice bottle of wine?
I can. I think, you know, interesting, you know, I'm far less educated in fragrance, but I did maybe 7 or 10 years ago go down this 1 or 2 month path of starting to really read and try to educate myself on it. And I think this will make sense for all the people that are deeply educated in fragrance. I don't have a favorite wine. I think Henrik spoke on it for a quick second. I think for me, when you're fortunate enough to know a category of something pretty well and you feel confident in it, you actually get away from the bougie-ness of it. You get away from like needing to do it to be cool. You actually fall in love with it. So I'll give you an example, just to maybe give a tidbit that everybody can run with. Portuguese wines are grossly underpriced because the country is not as well known for its wines like France or Italy or Germany, but the quality of the wines are incredible. So the ability for me, who's fairly nerdy about this, to find a $15 or $20 Portuguese wine that tastes like a $60 or $70 French or California or Italian wine is pretty easy. And then there's time and place and mood. Sometimes you just want, if you're eating oysters, there's gonna be a Sancerre or a Riesling that's gonna excite you more than a Barolo or a Cabernet. So for me, much like the fragrance industry, which is why so many people carry multiple fragrances in at home, or why I love that you've done two. I think that's always a miss by a lot of fragrances to only go with one. I think it's time, place, mood, energy. And so it ebbs and flows for me. I get on streaks, but I don't have a favorite. What I'm passionate about, if I can stand on this soapbox for one more second, I do know that the people here who like wine don't try enough different wines. They find, I like Pinot Noir, or I'm a red Burgundy person, or I like Sancerre, and they just drink the same shit over and over and over again. And I highly recommend that if you're intrigued or somewhat interested in wine, that you consider exploring a little more, because how do you know what your favorite wine is if you haven't had 99% of them?
Yeah, so
please.
Back to your process.
No. Well, you know. Anyway, it's been a fantastic trip to create this niche fragrance, and like you said, taking an 18-month and a niche fragrance. Matures just like a wine.
Yep.
And we did actually have a scent. Can I just tell this story?
Please.
Sure.
We did have a fantastic scent very early on in the process. And it happens that I called Henrik one night in New York, and he said, I said, have you smelled the new scents? Got it? It's like, yeah. You know what? I just dropped the bottle on the floor in the bathroom. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it feels good. And then after a week, he said, no, you know what? My wife, Vanessa, she can't stand the scent. we have to
scrap it.
And I'm like, oh, wow, well, that was the best one. Yeah, so we had to start all over.
Meant to be.
And another part of a really nice bottle of wine is the bottle.
Yes.
And you said it before. It's created by a crystal company in Sweden that's called Orefors. And for us, it's a heritage. They have a series of glasses inspired by New York City. It's called City Glasses. And you'll all get a gift from us with the same glasses, and it's inspired the bottle as well.
Very nice. You're supposed to clap when you get a gift.
The welcome drinks that you're going to have tonight, or if you have them, they're also inspired by the two scents, and one of them is served by the same glasses as well.
It's very nice.
Yeah. Thank you, Gary, for giving me some time here.
Of course. It's a real honor. Henrik, any last words for everybody here as we segue into mingling and spending some time with each other?
Just thanks for coming. And I just have to say, back to finding that passion, what inspires you, and having great people around you, I think as an athlete, especially team sports, you can kind of sport because it's part of your everyday having great people around you. But it's also extremely exciting to you know, when you pivot into something new, to try to find new people, to become, you know, a new team.
Yes.
To find those pieces in your life. And we're starting a new journey here for this project, and I'm excited to get going. So cheers to that.
Cheers.
Thank you for coming. And enjoy your drinks.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you for coming.